At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome in to Run the Damn Podcast. Rob Snyder alongside Craig Kolodny. Craig, this is our 10th episode. What, wow. What do we get?
There were many people that said we wouldn't get to 10 episodes, and here we are. Shout out to all of our loyal viewers. We appreciate your support. Let's make number 10 a great one.
Yeah, I think it will be a great one. Also, I never do this because I'm a bad podcast host, and because you and I are doing this for the first time, well, the 10th time.
Yeah.
But if you do like the podcast, please subscribe. Please hit the like button. Do all the things that all the other podcasts tell you to do, but do it for ours also. So thanks for that. Great week in the NFL. Great weekend in general in sports. We'll get to that.
Oh, yeah.
Patriots nibble the Falcons 24-23 in a game. Craig, I have to say, this is what happens when you're 7-2. I got negative takes for you today. I am down. I mean, I'm not like super down, but I am down on the Pats. I have a lesser feeling for the Patriots tonight than I usually do.
Normally you tee me up here to get cranking. You get us going here. You set the table here. What's your negative thoughts?
So I have real concerns now with there's a few things I have concerns about. Drake May is not one of them. I know he went back to turning the ball over today. But it doesn't seem like that's a thing that he's been doing. So I chalk that up as a bad game, and we'll see. Hopefully that doesn't continue. I have a negative feeling about two things. One, the defense, pass defense, not thrilled. Okay. I'm going to read you real quickly a list of the opponent passer ratings for the Patriots by game.
Okay.
102.8. 115.5, 96.1, 84, 103.3, 102.6, 92.2, 65.9, 103.5.
It sounds like you just named six radio stations.
Opponent quarterbacks have only gone below a 92.2 rating twice all year. And you know their schedule. Yeah. This is not a lot of good.
Cam Ward, Michael Penix.
Cam Ward over
Bryce,
90.
Bryce Young.
Spencer Rattler over. So I'm not thrilled with the pass defense. I'm not thrilled with the way they're playing on the back end. I don't think the pass rush is always creating havoc. If they're not getting there, it doesn't feel like they're creating pressures. And then on the other side of the ball, the offensive line is starting to worry me a little bit. And the predictability of their offense, and I'm not necessarily – maybe I'm overreacting to one game, but it felt like in the second half the Falcons kind of knew what they were going to do.
Okay, so let me react to those, I guess, individually. The defense, I agree, I'm a little worried about. I'm not as worried as you. What I didn't like today is that they felt like they could not get off the field in the red zone defensively. Atlanta was 3-for-3 in the red zone, and it's just, you know, that's where bend but don't break obviously became a thing here for forever. And I just think that watching them not be able to get off the field, despite, I mean, my goodness, let's also just give Drake London, I mean, my God, what a freaking game.
If you drop me on planet Earth right now and I watch that game, I would think Drake London's the best receiver in the world.
Right. I mean,
he's good.
Yeah, he's very good. But
yeah,
I am concerned a little bit about the defense, not as much as you. Obviously, Gonzalez looks like he's okay after, you know, leaving.
Yeah, he said as much.
And the fact that he's speaking after the game is obviously a good sign, as we know. But I'm not as worried. I think Atlanta, and we'll get to the coaching and later in the yeah, pod, but Atlanta has talent. I don't think
they don't know how to use it.
They don't know how to use it. And that's a great way of putting it. So I'm not as concerned about the defense, but I understand why you'd be concerned given those passer ratings again against the quarterbacks that they faced. Offensive line. I don't want to be the offensive line podcast. I'm not as worried. I think they could use some depth. I think I'm concerned if one of those guys goes down. I mean, they've been lucky that all five have played, been healthy the whole time outside of Wilson missing one game. May, I'm worried. Not worried. Concerned.
Wow. Okay. Not worried. I like this because we're both concerned about things differently.
Yeah. I'm not worried. That was strong. Let me rephrase. I saw some old habits return today. Yeah. And to me, the whole game changed when May wasn't protecting the football in the final 30 seconds of the first half.
Yeah, obviously.
And it's like, we saw that in the Pittsburgh game where it's just, you know, turnovers late in the half, like not all turnovers aren't created equal. And I just think that for me, I forget, what were they at? Were they up 14?
They're up 21-7. They're going down to make it 24-28-7. And then they end up being 21-14.
Yeah, you're about to end the game for all intents and purposes.
Yeah.
And to me, it's just he got lazy with the ball. He got lazy with the ball. And to me, that's just inexcusable for a guy who, again, I don't feel like he's an MVP candidate per se. I mean, maybe he's a candidate, but I don't think he's got any shot at winning it. But if you're going to be in that conversation halfway through the season, you got to protect the ball better. And obviously the interception, I think that was just a rare, you know, that was a clearly miscommunication with him and Hunter Henry. Yeah. But I just, on the bright side, I did love the play call at the end of the game where they did get it to Henry. You know, mm-hmm. I don't think May was very good. They could have easily run the ball and just tried to play defense with 45 seconds, knowing Atlanta probably couldn't get down the field. But I like the play call. I like that they made a nice, easy throw for him, get him some confidence to end the game after a game where he clearly played his worst game in, you know, 4 or 5 weeks.
So I thought I agree, 4 or 5 weeks. I mean, he's been absurd lately. Sure. So I get it. I thought he still made a lot of great throws in this game. It just felt like the negatives were big negatives.
Yep.
I think the couple things impacted him today. Losing Booty early.
Yes.
I think Diggs is playing banged up. He didn't look like Diggs today. He had the one nice play. You know, the touchdown was fine. But he had the one that really nice long pass towards the sideline. Other than that, I thought Diggs looked a little banged up. And I think the offensive line is starting to concern him a little bit. He's taking a lot of hits back there.
He is.
And again, like, it felt like when the Falcons were decent in the second half of getting them into third and long. When they pin their ears back, they're coming. And I just started to think to myself, we have barely seen the Patriots down in games right so far.
Yeah.
And if they get into pass mode because we're down, I just wonder how long that offensive line is going to be able to handle that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think he's been taking sacks when they have had the lead. So he's been taking sacks in previous games when they're winning. Obviously, he took a handful more today. I think part of it, he's still trying to figure out that rhythm of, you know, I really don't think every sack is on the offensive line. Like, there's not.
No, that's true. I agree.
Like, I don't think all of these sacks are like, oh, Will Campbell got beat by the defensive end and May had no chance. Like, I think some of these are May's doing his first two reads. He doesn't have anybody open. He's trying to run up the middle, and then he runs into a guy, and it's like, well, there's your sack. And, you know, they're not all the same. But to me, I think the offensive line's a concern. That's probably my biggest concern at this point. Mm-hmm. I'm not as worried about the defense. I agree with you about the ratings of, you know, they're giving up a lot of yards and whatever. I think the defense is going to be okay as long as they stay healthy. I think, again, dodging a serious bullet. If Gonzalez goes down, it just changes everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, he said he's fine, which is good. He said it was in concussion protocol and he got passed. So I think that was the only, it wasn't like, at first I thought like, oh man, did he like break a collarbone or something?
I know.
But no, he seems to be fine.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, you know, they're still a good team. They're still 7-2. They're tied now atop the AFC.
Yep.
Which we'll get to, but you know, steps in the right direction, but it's, I, at Tampa becomes even more interesting now. That's a very, very fun, solid test that I think they now need after a game like this.
Yeah, it's going to be their first real test since Week 5 at Buffalo. And look, I mean, Baker's obviously been playing very well this year. It's going to be another road test. Tampa's coming off the bye. These are the games we've been looking for. I mean, we talked 5 weeks ago after they beat the Bills, and we saw that it was Saints and Browns and, you know, Falcons, whoever else they've played the last month. And I think we're just waiting for another game like this. So we'll see where they stack up against one of the better NFC teams. To me, another thing that kind of, you know, this is a, just bringing it back to Sunday's game, that I don't think it's obviously big because it talks about the end of the game, but the fact that they kept Borgalis and got rid of Parker Romo, and look, it could have easily gone the other way today. It, yep. You know, that's just the nature of kicking, but it's like the, not irony, but just the fact that it was the guy who lost the competition who missed an extra point. If you watched it closely, I think it was the extra point before that or a field. I think it was the extra point before it. He almost missed that one
too. Yeah, he did. Yeah, it was same work direction too.
Yeah, yeah. Same thing off to the right. So it's like, it's one of those things where, you know, Vrabel and his team have been making, feels like they've been making the right decisions for a while now. All these guys that they got rid of haven't come back to haunt them. And then Borgalis is really, since one
back, he's been really good. Yeah.
Yeah, he's been mostly lights out. And obviously they benefit from their former, you know, the backup not getting it. I wanted to ask you, what do you think? You mentioned Booty, and I want to talk about the wide receivers because Booty is somebody that really, we've talked about it, how he developed the chemistry with May last year. There were some balls that were to Douglas today, a couple to Kyle Williams, where I was like, man, Booty would have been in the right spot there. And it just,
Douglas had a nice game, but yeah,
he did. But you know what I'm talking about? Like, there's some sideline throws, there's some in cuts that I just feel like that's one that, you know, it's a hamstring, so you just don't know how long he's going to be out. But that would be a pretty big loss for an offense that, you know, really spreads it around, but could use his playmaking.
Yeah, and Booty posted on Instagram that he's getting an MRI, which is not the best sign. But yeah, no, and obviously I talked about him last week. I really like him. It's an interesting time to hurt your hamstring 2 days before the trade deadline. That would be an ideal time. I don't think they're going to get receiver help anyway. It doesn't seem like there's receiver help out there. Jalen Waddle seems to be commanding a first, which they're not paying first for Jalen Waddle.
Nope.
So nobody No, he's going to stay there. But it is interesting. So I was actually going to ask you about that. And since you brought it up, the other thing I was going to ask you is actually about the trade deadline. So I'm curious, do you think they add? And where do you think they try to add?
I think they do add. I think part of unloading Duggar and unloading Keon White last week was to kind of set the table for what they're going to do here. Strangely enough, I think they're going to add on the defense.
Yeah.
And you
seems
know,
like pass rusher is what they're interested in.
It seems like pass rush, you know, Landry and Chaisson have done a pretty good job. Obviously, Landry was fairly quiet today.
Do you remember our bold predictions at the beginning of the season?
Yeah, I said Kalyvon Chaisson would lead the
team. I believe he does lead the team in sacks. He's got 5.5 now.
I'll double down on that.
Yeah.
My boy Kalyvon. Yeah, I mean, as far as the trade deadline goes, Rob, I think again, for me, defense, pass rusher, safety, although I don't think they're going to have a safety because they just added that guy that they signed off the practice squad. So it feels like they've settled that. I wouldn't mind getting another corner. I know that's hard to come by. Didn't the Eagles just get a corner?
They got two corners. Yeah, they traded for two corners. They traded for Michael Carter, and they traded for Jair Alexander,
that's right.
Yeah.
Again,
I still don't know if he's going to play, but yes.
To me, I would give up a fifth or sixth round pick for a corner if you like him. I think that's one of those positions where if Charles Woods and Alex Austin are your backups to Davis and Gonzalez, two guys that I wouldn't say they're injury prone, but Davis has been injured before. So is Gonzalez. To me, your defense changes dramatically. If you all of a sudden you don't have a Gonzalez or Davis out there now, Jalen Hawkins and Craig Woodson don't look as good as they've looked. So
yeah, and the prices are low right now for corners.
Yeah,
there's no like elite corners out there. But if you're looking for depth in the secondary, that the prices is you're flipping day three picks.
Yeah, to me, I would do that in a heartbeat. I don't think offensive linemen really get traded this time of year. Like quality offensive linemen, you're not going to get. You're just going to get depth, which you already have. So to me, I think it's pass rusher. I would still add a running back. I know we've talked about it. I thought Travion Henderson looked good today. You know, Terrell Jennings was fine. Like I thought it was interesting that Terrell Jennings was getting the ball when they were trying to protect the 1 point lead on the final drive. But I would add another running back. I think you can get running backs for 6th, 7th round picks. And it's like how many 6th or 7th round picks make the team. So that's kind of where I'm at there. What do you think?
I agree. It's funny. I don't think the price for pass rushers seems to be crazy. And I don't think they're going to pay that price. Like, I don't know. Jalen Phillips, is he worth like a second? I don't, I don't know. I don't think so.
No.
He's coming off an injury. Jermaine Johnson also coming off a year where he's injured. Is he worth a, you know, a high pick? It's helpful, but I don't know if edge rush is such a problem right now that you need to be giving up like high picks for it.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're, all I think is that like you can't send Duggar and White off for very little and not get something.
Right.
It just doesn't feel like it's something a 7-8 team should be doing, is unloading guys and not bringing something in. So they're, you know, maybe there's something on the margins that is available that, you know, something cool I don't even know about. But you know, it would be nice to see them add, if only for the sake of adding, for, you know, hey, we're trying to improve this team, we're going for it.
Would you have any interest, and I know running back is just a position these days and has been for a while, I feel like the Saints have some pieces, and I wonder if Alvin Kamara could be a nice change of pace with Henderson and Stevenson. You know, keep Jennings as depth on the practice squad, or I guess he has to stay on the team now because they've elevated him too many times. But to me, the Saints are going to give Kamara away, and I feel like the Pats could be a team that, again, what's it going to cost? A 6th-round pick? 5th-round pick?
Yeah.
I don't know. So, I'm looking at guys that have talent that can make a play to open a game. You know, open a game.
I actually discussed this with people during the week, Kamara.
Yeah.
And the first reaction was, well, he said that he would retire before playing anywhere but New Orleans.
Yeah.
And to that I say, well, you're not signing with a team long term.
No.
And you're not going through camp with them.
Right.
You can literally keep your house in New Orleans and live in a hotel for, 2 months?
Yeah.
Play for the Patriots and then get up on out of here. So,
yep.
I mean, I think they could sell it. It doesn't feel like they want to do it. I don't, unless they're trying to play coy, but I would trade for Kamara. Absolutely. If I were the Patriots, yeah. I don't know. It might be a situation where the Saints, out of respect to him, are like, look, if you don't want to be traded, we're not going to trade you.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know why Alvin Kamara. I mean, he might love New Orleans. That's great. But I don't know why you would just want to be a Saint.
Who doesn't love New Orleans? It's a great city. Yeah.
The Bayou.
Yeah.
Do you have any other past thoughts before we move on to the chefs?
No, I think we covered most of it. You know, I think we'll get into the coaching thing later. But just looking at the Falcons and just in general, between London and Bijan and Pitts, and I know Pitts has been a disappointment. It
stinks.
Like, they should be better.
They should be better.
And I'm not saying that if they hired Belichick a couple years ago instead of Raheem, they'd be better. But I don't know. But that's the Falcons. That was really the only other takeaway, is that they should really be a better team than they are
in that division too. It's a joke.
Right.
All right. So the Chiefs Bills, the marquee matchup of the day. Chiefs go into Buffalo. They lose 28-21.
Yep.
Can I say it? Patrick Mahomes sucked.
Yeah.
Are we allowed to say that? Can we just say he sucked?
It's our podcast. We can say anything.
All right.
So
he was bad.
Say it again.
He was bad. I don't think Mahomes is a bad quarterback. He sucked today.
15-34.
Yeah, he's bad. Yeah, bad day.
Any other quarterback did that today. You would say they sucked.
Yeah. So. He's more than welcome to be great next week, and I'll say he's great, but yeah, he sucked today.
You know what his QB rating was today?
What?
57.2.
It's bad. You know what that is? That would be it's lower than Dylan Gabriel versus the Patriots last week.
Whoa.
I know Dylan that because Gabriel. I read you the passer ratings sure when did. This thing started.
You sure did.
Big picture wise.
Yeah.
I'm going to start with this.
Sure.
If the Chiefs and Bills play each other again.
Yeah. Chiefs win.
Do you have any, any confidence the Bills will win again?
I thought if the game went another 30 seconds, the Chiefs would have won. But
they might have, yeah.
To me, like, good for the Bills. Like, Andy Santillo, you know, breaking tables today. But
yeah.
I think that, you know, the Bills are – I have zero faith that they would, you know, win this matchup again. I don't really love Sean McDermott. I think he kind of makes some strange decisions. I think he – even the one at the end of the game today where – why is he having a kicker kick a 50-yard field goal with 30 seconds left? Just punt it.
Yeah.
Punt it down to the 10-yard line. Make him go 90 yards in 25 seconds instead of 60 yards in 30 seconds. But
yeah,
I think he freezes up in bad situations. I mean, good for the Bills, get a win. You know, the Chiefs, everyone thought they were back to being the best team in football. And obviously they did not look very good today, and they're healthy, healthy in a sense that they have all their weapons. So that's where I'm at with the Bills and Chiefs.
Yeah. It's interesting that the Chiefs are now 5-4.
Yep.
Which puts them on the outside looking in. Do I think they're gonna miss the playoffs? No. I think you have to start considering them not the team to beat in the AFC at some point. but I don't know if anybody will readily admit that. Bill showed me something today. My biggest takeaway is that I didn't have the Bills as a contender 2 weeks ago because I just don't believe in the Bills.
Yep.
And maybe I'm just falling into the trap of the Bills being the Chiefs in the regular season like they always do.
Yep.
But they did show me something today. And the fact that Josh Allen can have that kind of day with the weapons he has, I think is impressive. And I think they're leaning on James Cook more, which they should have done earlier in the season. And it's working out for them really well. So
their defense is playing better too. I mean, we talked about Mahomes' play today, but I mean, a lot of that goes to the Bills too. Their defense.
My concern with them is, are they going to go into the next Chiefs matchup if they have one and play the exact same defense expecting the same results?
Right.
Which is what happens every year.
Yeah.
So good win by the Bills. We now have a log jam at the top of the AFC. We have Colts, Patriots, Broncos, all 7-2, Bills 6-2.
Just like Steelers, we predicted at the beginning of the year, right? Pats, Colts, Broncos, 7-2 leading with the Steelers 5-3.
And of course you get the Steelers somehow beating the Colts today in a game really they really had control of most of the game. That brings us to a very short segment. Fine or concerned? Does this team fine or are you concerned about them? And
explaining the rules.
We'll start with the Colts.
Okay, Colts. Let me see. Not concerned.
No.
But I'd say getting concerned. Not concerned, but getting there. Of course, it's Pittsburgh, by the way, that beats them. Like, the mediocre Steelers just...
Their defense has been trash all year, and there they go.
Yep. I know. So, to me, this is the recipe. We talked about it earlier in the pod with the Patriots. It's like... what do these quarterbacks look like when they're trailing in games? And to me, we saw Daniel Jones trailing. And if there was ever a quarterback that was not meant to trail in a football game, it's Daniel Jones. I mean, he had three interceptions in the first eight games. He had three more today. I just think he's a different quarterback when they're not, leading and giving the ball to Jonathan Taylor and then doing play action where he's got wide open receivers. So I'm not concerned, but I'm getting concerned.
I guess I'm with you. I don't want to sit on the fence like that, but I think I'm going to
join
my thought with the Colts is when your offense is that bad against that bad of a defense, one of two things happen. Either you hit a speed bump where you just play like crap, or you've now put enough on film and someone caught it. So did the Steelers see something the Colts do and they say, that's it. This is how we stopped the Colts. And now every other team is going to copycat that.
Yep.
Or was this just a bad game? So I am, I'm leaning more concerned than I am fine.
Okay.
Let's go with the Packers.
Okay.
Who have now lost 13-10 to the Browns and 16-13 to the Carolina Panthers. Go Carolina's 5-4. Good for Carolina.
They were my winner. They were my pick to win the NFC South, which is not going to happen, but they'll be in the conversation at least in December.
They will. This was one of those games where at halftime, you knew it. I just knew it. This felt like a Packers loss a lot of this game. Are they fine or are you concerned?
I'm concerned, especially with Tucker Kraft potentially tearing his ACL. I mean, he's Jordan Love's go-to guy.
Is it official at this point?
Well, they're feared that he tore his ACL. We'll see.
I mean, that's just something that's
usually when you fear it, it's true. But talk about turnaround. Talk about Jekyll and Hyde. The Carolina Panthers, here are the results. And I know this is about the Packers, but just to tell you who the Packers lost to.
Oh, no. This is about the Panthers.
The Panthers.
This podcast is about the Panthers.
The Panthers lost 26-10 to Jacksonville. They beat Atlanta 30-0. And then the next week, lost to the Patriots 42-13. And then just jumping ahead, the last three games, they barely beat the Jets 13-6, who were winless at the time. They lost at home to Buffalo 40-9 last week, and then they go into Lambeau and beat the Packers.
You also skipped them beating Dallas.
Yes, they beat Dallas in the before the Jets game. So, I mean, again, I know this isn't about the Panthers, but to me, if you're the Packers losing to the Panthers is almost like if the Patriots had lost to the Falcons today. And I just, you know, and I know it was close. The Patriots almost did. But the if you're the Packers and you're trying to fight for everything, you know, you're fighting for the division, potentially a one seed down the road, you can't lose at home to the Panthers. I know the Panthers are 5-4. Like, good for them, but you just can't lose. They have very few weapons. You can't lose to the Panthers.
One side of the ball lets them down. It feels like each game there's something there. They peaked so early this year.
Yep.
And it just doesn't feel it doesn't feel like they can follow up momentum. Right. And that's kind of been a Matt LaFleur thing for a long time.
Yep.
One more, Lions.
Yep.
Who I said last week, I think it was last week, that people seem to overreact to all the Lions' wins and just not react to their losses. Well, they lose again.
Yeah.
J.J. McCarthy's return, 27-24 to Minnesota. Not a very good Minnesota team. Sorry, just not. Your thoughts on the Lions, fine or concerned?
I'm not concerned. I think that might surprise you because I think they're fine. I think they'll be a tough out. Definitely a surprising result. I don't have a ton of thoughts on the Lions. I think I agree with you that people tend to ignore when they lose and only talk about their wins. But Minnesota's a well-coached team. I think Kevin O'Connell is one of the top five coaches probably in the NFL.
We only do bottom five coaches, Kurt.
Yeah, I know. He will never be in it. Spoiler alert. A divisional opponent, teams that know each other well. I can't say I'm overly surprised by the result, but yeah, I mean, them losing, I don't think I think people thought the Lions would probably win 12 to 13 games, and now they already have three losses, so it's going to be hard for them to get there.
Concerned.
Nice.
I'm going concerned.
Okay.
Because you know what? Why do we always ignore when the Lions lose?
Don't ignore them.
No, I'm concerned. They shouldn't be. If they're that good, they shouldn't have this many losses. And by the way, what history is there with the Detroit Lions to ignore when they lose? What thing have the Detroit Lions done where people are like, they'll be fine? They're never fine. They are never. They won zero playoff games last year. They are never fine.
So I know this isn't.
I will remain concerned until I see them win important games down the road.
So who's the best team in the NFC right now?
Oh man, by default, it might be the Eagles by default. You know what? We get Eagles Packers Monday night next week, which is great.
Okay,
because that will answer a lot of questions for us.
Yep.
The team I kind of love right now, which is such a shame because their quarterback is just such a. I love Seattle. I know they're playing right now.
Currently up 7-0.
Do I think they're the best team in the NFC? No, but I do love Seattle. It still might be. It might be my Rams from the beginning of the year. My prediction there. They obviously had a good game today, but it's week to week. It's so hard. Yeah. But I do really like the way Seattle plays. It's just like, am I really gonna say that Sam Darnold? If the Seahawks and Lions played today, I would have zero clue where that game's going.
Yeah. I mean, Seahawks are up 7-0 right now. I have my eye on it. And, the Commanders are a team that I know you're down on. So we'll see. Seahawks might be able to get to 6-2.
And that'd be great. That's a great division race because the Rams are 6-2 and then the 49ers are 6-3. They're still a mirage to me, but we'll see. You ready to do bottom five coaches?
Yes. I'm fired up for this.
All right. You know what? You're fired up. Why don't you go first?
All right. Number five. I'm going to do this quick because I want to get to number one. Sure. Number one, I have a lot of my thoughts on.
Okay. Number I think five, we have the same number one.
Number one, Jack Locker and Brian Daboll. That's for you.
That's your number five, right?
Number five. Okay, three straight losses. Right. They've allowed 33, 38, and 34 points. Number four, Pete Carroll. Just to summarize what happened today to keep it fresh from last week.
Yeah.
They were up by three in the final 90 seconds, couldn't get a stop at home against Jacksonville. Then goes to overtime and they allow a touchdown on the opening drive.
Yes, the longest opening drive I've ever seen in overtime.
Longest opening drive. Then they go down and get a touchdown. I respect that they went for two, obviously, to try to get the win, because
tie does nothing.
But of course, don't get it. They've won two games. They beat the Patriots week one, and they've beaten the Titans since. That's it. Pete Carroll, number four. Number three, Raheem Morris. I know he made the list last week.
He's bad.
He makes so many bad decisions. The fact that he actually blamed the clapping thing, like, after the game today, blows my mind. Like, what?
Yeah.
He's like thinking that the Pats simulated the snap, blah, blah, blah. Done. Yeah. I don't have time for that. Number two, Kellen Moore. This is actually the first time you've made my list.
Yeah. Yeah. It's about
surprisingly,
time.
Surprisingly, this is the first time. You're 1-8. You've been outscored 57-13 the last two games.
They're so punchless.
They showed some fight early in the year, so I tried to give them some grace, but they're a really awful football team.
Yeah.
Number one, Zachary Taylor.
Yeah, yeah.
You are a freaking train wreck. I don't think I've ever seen this before, Rob. Do you know he challenged a fumble that actually resulted in his team losing the challenge and getting a touchdown scored against him?
I did not see this.
Oh, yeah. So DJ Moore runs an end around, and he reaches the ball out at the goal line. The refs call him out of bounds at the one. They're like the half-yard line.
Yeah.
Taylor challenges it because he thinks Moore fumbled it through the end zone.
Just scored a touchdown.
They review it, and it was actually just a touchdown.
Oh, my God.
It's incredible. But wait, there's more. Okay, because Zachary Taylor, this is just where we're at. So not only did he do that, they gave up 47 points to the Bears.
Yeah.
I think I saw the Bears hadn't scored that many points since like 2017 or 2018. You know how many yards the Bears had on offense?
It was over 500.
576 yards.
So I saw earlier today there have been five games this season where teams have had over 500 yards. Three of them are against the Bengals.
Not surprising. Thank you for helping me make my case.
Yeah.
And I just can't believe, not only that, just to summarize the whole game, they lost 47-42. To the Bears. So they're down by two scores with like 3 minutes left, maybe less. They score a touchdown, recover the onside kick, score a touchdown, take the lead, erase a 14-point deficit, take a lead, and then they allow Caleb Williams to hit the tight end over the middle. Nobody tackles him, and he just runs free at the end of the game. Just blows my mind.
Just your run-of-the-mill 60-yard touchdown to a tight end.
Yeah,
just run-of-the-mill.
Like,
yeah.
What the
happens
hell
all
is
the time.
Happening? What the hell is happening? Like, I mean, if Flacco's balling, it just blows my mind. They can't get any stops defensively. They strike me as a team that is not going to fire him in season, and they'll just ride it out until the end. But I mean, my goodness, they're just an awful football team with an awful head coach.
Yeah, awful.
That's my list. How'd I do?
I love it. You did great. Always. Right, you always do great.
Let's hear it.
All right. So number five, I have Kellen Moore. It's not even fun. Like, what do I say? You just don't compete. And I thought you were a bad coach ever since you got hired. So you're there. Number four was tough. It was between guys that didn't coach today. I went with Aaron Glenn just because, like, he's kind of becoming like a meme of himself.
Yeah. Dude, the Aaron Glenn dancing thing to September.
Yeah.
So
freaking,
I know it's like
exactly.
Girl,
yeah.
It's so freaking good.
And like ever since that dance, they've just been so embarrassing. So I am going to throw him on there. I almost went Jonathan Gannon. But I didn't get any new material today.
Yeah.
I
know isn't it hard to add guys when you don't like, you just not forget about them, but it's like Mike McDaniel wasn't on my list, even though they got rolled over.
Speaking of number three on my list is Mike McDaniel.
Yep.
How are you not fired yet?
I know. Right. What's
and like, I've seen people be like, well, they should get rid of Tua before they get Tua's makes $53 million a year.
Right.
There's no dead cap to fire Mike McDaniel.
No.
Just fire the guy. What are we doing here? They were so bad on Thursday night.
Yeah.
So bad. They're going to sell off their whole team and keep their head coach. What's going on here? Two, don't tell me. Whoever's coaching the Titans, I don't want to know.
I've already forgotten his name.
My goal is to finish the year. We start talking about the wild card weekend. It's the end of week 17. And I say, Craig, you can tell me now.
Okay.
Who coaches the Titans? Until then, I don't want to know. I don't want to see another Titans game. I don't want to see an ISO of him on the sideline. I don't want to see his name on the screen.
You know who
coaches the Titans? I have no idea who it is. Tell me.
No. It's not the real guy. It's Denzel Washington. He coaches the Titans.
Yeah. Coach Boone.
Wrong side.
What's the name
of the movie? Coach Boone.
Coach Boone. Yeah.
Is it Coach Herman Boone?
Yes, yeah, Coach Boone. Herman Boone. Yeah. That's actually not just his name in the movie. That's his name in real life.
No, it's only his name in the movie.
And he's based on a true story.
Also the current head coach of the Titans.
Yeah. And number one, for all the reasons that you mentioned, Zach Taylor, of course. I don't have to repeat it. I do want to point out that today was one of the most Joe Flacco stat lines of all time. 8 billion yards, yep. 4 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Yep. We got the full Joe Flacco today.
But I mean, let's be honest. He's 40 years old, and he's keeping them in games when their defense can't get off the field. And he just got there like 2 weeks ago.
It's awesome. He's tremendous. Yep. So we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 one-score games today. Great job, NFL.
Yep.
Good job, everyone. Playing their asses off still. Even the Titans were in a one-score game, coached by who knows what. I'm loving this season so far. It's a very enjoyable season.
Yeah.
Not one that people have a lot to complain about. But it's time to move on from football and talk about one of the most entertaining World Series I have ever seen. One of the most entertaining Game Sevens in a World Series I have ever seen. The Dodgers win it. They win Game 7 in 12 innings. 5-4. So, Craig.
Yeah.
Tell me the biggest moment where the Blue Jays blew this thing in Game 7.
Okay. Well, see.
Or lead with something that's on your mind that you need to hit first.
To me, this was... I have a lot of thoughts, but to me... The signature play of this game, this is just, again, one man's take. The catch by Andy Páez games on the line, he's running full speed to the warning track. If he doesn't catch the ball, it's over. And he not only catches the ball, he comes in the game mid-inning. He didn't even start the inning in center field. He came in like the middle of the inning to play center. Comes in, makes a play. Makes an unbelievable catch while truck sticking his teammate, Kike Hernandez, like looked like a little kid and his father out there. So it's just crazy to me. That's the biggest play. I know we talked very briefly before we started recording. You feel like that play at the plate is, you know, the signature play.
Yeah. So first of all, I just want to say like that play was awesome. Yeah. And I don't know why Kike Hernandez was so freaking shallow to the point where a ball that's like, That ball was hit pretty high in the air.
Yeah.
And it only went to the warning track. There's zero reason Kike Hernandez should be running full speed with his glove over his, you know, over his shoulder like he's Willie freaking Mays.
I know.
And
but if anybody would do that, it would be Kike trying to do
that. And the fact that Páez was just like, no. We're going to lose the World Series if you don't make this play. I'm going to check you out of this play and make the catch. It was awesome. I can't think of another, like, teammate-on-teammate crime for a good – it's like – if a guy is like running down the field and is about to be stripped, so his teammate tackles him first or something like that. It's like, I couldn't even think of an example, but yeah. So the play at home, and I know like people have been freezing the heck out of this video.
Right.
But dude, you have to get a secondary leadoff third. It's the World Series. Like you are the World Series championship winning run. At third base, the infield is drawn in, and you are standing 2 yards from third with zero movement until the ball is hit.
I think it's emotional baggage from the night before, though, Rob. I think with the way Game 6 ended, with the guy getting doubled off second, I think that it was just ingrained in them, like, do not get doubled off. And
I mean,
and look, to me, he's also the batter's got to lift the ball, like the. There's a lot of situational hitting and there's a million plays that could have changed the game. But to me, the inning before when they had a man on second and don't get anybody in, it's just, there's all these situational things that get magnified in a one game kind of do or die situation. And look, to me, couldn't you also point the finger at Jeff Hoffman? Like what? you're giving up a home run to a guy that is it's like Bucky Dent hitting a home run. I mean, it was a light hitting middle infielder that hit a home run to tie the game with two outs, or with when you need two outs to win the World Series.
Like, yeah, but I mean, that's like blaming Bill Buckner for the previous five runs in the game. Like, I have to.
Yeah, but Rob, you can't give up a home run. You can't give up a home run to a guy that hits like 170.
Sure.
You can't. Yes. You just can't. I know.
So, yes, I also blame Jeff Hoffman. Yes.
But it's like.
Now that home run is in the past. Sure. And you're on third base. And the ball is hit. First of all, I know you said you want to lift the ball. The pitcher on the mound is throwing splitter after splitter after splitter. You're not lifting the ball off of splitter after splitter. That ball is hit to a second baseman who is not in shape. Gets the grounder and then trips over himself before throwing it home. Like, yeah. Not scoring there. Like, the moment that he like fell back,
yeah.
I'm like, well, this game's over.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't beat the throw home. And you see the replay and it's like, he's just standing there until the ball's hit. Like, when the pitcher like goes into the stretch, you don't want to take like a couple crow hops towards home before you like. And then like it was such a lax, like, not that like a better slide's getting him in. He's out.
Right.
But it just looked like he was like going through the freaking motions. Like, it was a spring training game.
And then, of course, yeah. I mean, I do understand that. I get that. It felt like a million plays that if one of them had gone differently, the Blue Jays win the World Series. And it's just, I thought the Vladimir Guerrero deep flyout, I thought that thing was gone.
I thought that was crushed. Yeah.
And he looked like he was starting to pimp it. And then it's just like, here we go. They're going to win it like the Joe Carter home run. But yeah. To me, the other play that we haven't talked about yet, the double play. And after the Dodgers took the lead, Guerrero doubles to lead off the whatever inning that was, the 11th. He gets the third on an awesome bunt. The guy gets walked, and here we are. And Kirk hits into the double play, and it's just like, it felt like that double play was coming. Just watching the game, you're like, you're waiting for him to hit the ball at a middle infielder and turn two because you know he's as slow as can be. And
I mean, the Blue Jays were perpetually on third base with less than two outs. It's heartbreaking the way they lost that game.
It was heartbreaking. It was very Toronto. You know, if you look at their history, give the Dodgers some credit. I mean, yes, they're good for baseball. I know people get upset with how much money they spend. Oh, whatever. They're good for baseball. They're good for baseball. Do you agree or no?
100%. Yes. Okay. I was going to add, that was my other point. We were talking before the pod started. I was like, I have one other point I want to bring up. Yeah. So many people think the Dodgers winning is bad for baseball. And they look at their roster and like, it's bad for baseball. It's like, no. This is proof that if you don't try as an organization, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Baseball is about, there's no cap. It is about spending to win. It's the same way the NHL used to be before they instituted a salary cap. It's the way it goes.
Yep.
And you know what? People are like, oh, well, Dodgers get everybody. Teoscar Hernandez was available until freaking March, mid-March, before they gave him that one-year deal because no one else would sign him.
Yep.
And like, they're like, oh, well, the Ohtani deal, they're all deferred all this money. How many teams are there now? 31? 30 sure. other teams.
However
30
many. Other, all of them.
30 other MLB teams had the option to sign Shohei Ohtani to that, and they didn't do it.
Yep.
So don't give me that. And also, they won 95 games. It's not like they won 120. Like,
and I think
Blue Jays took them to seven.
Yeah. And I think the other thing, just to kind of, as we head towards the finish line here on this episode, like, good for baseball. Like, that was just a freaking awesome series. Two teams giving it all they have, an underdog team against, you know, a team with a huge payroll going toe to toe. For me, I was back in on baseball for the first time in a couple of years. Obviously the Red Sox helped with that with Roman Anthony and whatnot. But to me, the game is so much more enjoyable to watch than it was 10 years ago, 5 years ago. And I really would love to see the momentum continue, but baseball just shoots itself in the foot and nothing's going to be interesting until March, mid-March.
Oh yeah. The hot stove is done. There's no hot stove.
So cold.
Anymore.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to Robo Umps. I like the idea of just like, you have to do it quick and they're very going to quickly be like, no, that's wrong and correct it and fine. I wish analytics were still not such a big part of the game. I miss the ability to move runners. I miss the ability to get the ball in play. I still think there's too much striking out. There's too much, like, everyone throws 100 for a very limited time, and then they're out of the game. But the product is still much, much better. Yeah. And this series was, I think the whole playoffs in general were like very, very good.
They're great. I do have one negative. Can I give you one negative?
Absolutely.
I didn't love, and this is, again, this is just my opinion. I didn't love the broadcast last night. I don't know. I never thought I'd say I missed Joe Buck on baseball, but I just, or Kevin Burkhardt doing the game. I just think listening to Davis and Smoltz, I feel like they weren't broadcasting that game like it was game 7 of the World Series, especially Smoltz. And I know he's just a very vanilla, like, I just don't think he has a lot of energy and a lot of personality to him. I mean, he's obviously super knowledgeable about the sport, which is why he's there. But I felt like Joe Davis kept going on and on about all the Blue Jays' accomplishment. It felt like he was giving all the Blue Jays all of their celebratory recognition when they were only up by 2 runs in the 8th and 1 run in the 9th. To me, he was treating the game like it was 10-2 in the 8th inning. Like, there was just, felt like he was missing some of the, like, nuances of this guy's on deck. This is the situation. Just, I wasn't overly impressed. And I think he's normally a good announcer.
Yeah, I was going to say, I love Joe Davis. I usually don't have anything. But yeah, I agree. I think they could have been a little bit more tense, like the rest of us.
Yeah.
I think adding to the tension would have been good. And, you know, I don't need much between pitches or between batters. So, like, I kind of agree with you there, but for the most part, I didn't notice it. I do really like Joe Davis. So that was a, it didn't bother me that much, but I could see what you're saying now. Yeah. And it did feel like he was kind of pre-announcing the World Series win for Toronto as they were up.
Right. And it was a 4-2 game in the 8th. And the momentum was clearly on the Dodgers' side at that point.
Yeah, very clearly. Yeah.
But, oh well.
Well, another 10th episode.
Yeah.
Came and went. And again, if you are listening and you're like moderately enjoying this, feel free to like, subscribe, do all the things that at least make us feel good about ourselves. We're not necessarily monetizing this, but it does feel good to know that people are enjoying it. People are listening. And people are looking forward to the next episode. So thank you again for Craig. I am Rob. Another Patriots win. Another great NFL Sunday. We'll probably hit a little bit more basketball next week as well. So until then, enjoy your week, everybody.